Hey, shitheads, exciting announcement alert. We've got merch.
There are a few ways that you can get your hands on this merch. One, keep checking our Instagram story for periodic giveaways.
And two, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/upshitscreek, sign up at the podcast producer level, and you'll get your pick of either a t-shirt, a tote bag, or a mug.
And remember, shitheads, this is all while supplies last, and this stuff is not for purchase. It is going to be given away to all of our fabulous listeners. That's you.
And now, on with the show.
Cliffy, I have not seen you since you starred in that electrifying courtroom drama about the potty-mouthed feral child.
Oh, that was an actual court case. And my daughter wanted to emancipate, and the press couldn't get enough.
Greetings, it's the Duke here.
And I'm Lady J, and this is Up Schitt's Creek, the podcast.
Dedicated to all things Schitt's Creek.
How are you, Duke?
Good. I said that very high-pitched at the end.
Did you?
Yeah. Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah. I hear it now that you've said that.
Oh, well. The moment's passed. I did it, and what?
It's fine.
I'm good.
Good.
How are you, Lady J?
I'm wonderful.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Back at it again.
I get it again.
6'10"?
6'10".
Whoa. It's weird. I always feel like when I see the episode number, that I'm wrong, that I got it wrong.
Oh, how funny.
Because I feel like there's so much more left.
Right. Yeah.
And now I'm like, no.
No,
this is right.
You're right.
There are four more left now after this.
Yep.
So, yep. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why don't we start this episode with a bit of Schitt's news?
Beedy beep 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 beedy beep.
They just announced that after the finale airs, which it's airing an hour earlier than usual, but then there's going to be an hour-long special that's kind of like behind the scenes-y. You know, I think they're going to show bits and bobs of the table read of the finale and some like behind the scenes of shooting. And it's called Best Wishes and Warmest Regards, A Schitt's Creek Farewell, which, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. I don't know how to feel about that. I don't know if I'm going to be more of a mess watching that.
Oh, for sure.
Or more of a mess watching the final episode.
I don't think I'll have a chance. I think the 30 minutes of the show is going to leave me a hot mess, and then it's just going to roll right into BTS stuff.
Which so it's going to be 30 minutes still, right? The final episode?
The show will be 30 minutes,
okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be an hour and a half of pure, gratitude and sadness and just love, I think, I hope.
I hope it leaves me with a feeling of, I guess, satisfaction.
Yeah.
Although that sort of feels like an inadequate word.
Right, you know? But yeah.
I don't want to feel anything but just, you know,
I can only assume that that's why they're doing this, because they want to like give us as much as they can at the very end. So we're left feeling like, okay, I'm not wanting for anything more.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually a smart move, I think, on their part to do that.
I think so too.
It's going to make it definitely more of an event.
Yeah.
Than just 30 minutes and then it's over, you know?
Yeah. When they announced it, I was like, not shocked.
Right.
I feel like it's a very Dan thing to do.
You think?
Because he very much likes to give the fans what they want.
That's true.
He's really good at like the emotional aspect of it, you know? And like the nostalgia of it. Because there's always going to remain that sense of calling this show home for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like in a million other shows that there are, but I think that also leaving us with this little bit afterwards is very smart of him.
Yeah.
So we'll all be holding hands across the globe together.
Oh, man. And we've got just under a month till that happens.
Yep. Four episodes.
Crazy.
And I think that's what's all new and exciting in the world of behind the scenes Schitt's Creek.
Yes.
With all of the actors.
That'll do it for Schitt's News this time around. Let's get into the episode, shall we?
Let's.
All right. This is episode 610, titled Sunrise, sunset.
I knew you were going to sing that.
I couldn't help it.
I know.
I've been doing that all these last few days. Ever since I saw the title, I was like, this is just, it's the most perfect title for this episode. The Pop TV synopsis is Moira's former Sunrise Bay producers show up with big news while Alexis binge watches old episodes of the soap.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
No mention of Johnny.
Nope.
Okay. Well, that was pretty important, but...
I mean, yeah. Definitely the B story, but...
Yeah, but...
Up there.
Important nonetheless.
I would say that there's really only the two... Well, I mean, I suppose Dan's whole thing is its own little story. I don't know. Although it feeds into Johnny's stuff.
Oh, David's whole situation?
Oh,
yeah.
Did I say... What did I say?
Dan.
Oh, I meant David. I mean,
sorry.
What's the difference?
Come on.
Why don't we start this episode the way we start all of our episodes?
Oh, word. Come on, baby, tell me what's the word. A word up. The segment where we give you our word. Would you like to start us off with your word?
You know, sure. So my word for this episode is reminiscing.
I like it.
Thank you. For the obvious reasons, right? Moira is reminiscing on her time on Sunrise Bay in this episode. And sort of the circumstances are leading her to doing that.
Yeah.
And with Johnny, he's reminiscing on what it meant for them in their past lives to have the kind of money that they had, where they didn't have to think about anything and nothing was, for lack of a better term, off limits to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of nostalgia kind of, you know, is weighing on both of their minds pretty heavily here.
Yeah.
So that's my word, reminiscing.
Nice. Thanks. I like that. So one, I'm going to kind of piggyback off that.
Okay.
And two, I'm going to steal somebody's word, one of our listeners, because before I ever thought about what I wanted my word to be or really knew, I saw their message and it just clicked and it made total sense. And I completely 100% agree. Our listener, Elle, sent us a message saying that her word for this episode is reminders.
Yeah.
She touched on a lot of things as far as Johnny, Alexis, and Moira. Being reminded who they are.
Yeah.
And what they're capable of. And where they've come. How much, where they've come from and how much they really have built this brand new and amazing life for themselves. And even when things are getting so difficult for them or they're questioning or they're second guessing themselves, they're being reminded by the people that they love of who they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And so reminders is that word, I feel like, for this episode. And thank you to Elle for kind of like planting the seed with that.
Yeah. No, very good word.
Yeah. A few of the other words that we have received from some listeners, fierce, and they explain that it's for all the lady power in this episode. Angela sent us discovery, and good old Frank sent us pride.
Oh,
good
words. Yeah. I can definitely see the pride factor here from everybody.
Yeah. So thank you.
Great job, guys.
And as always, send us your word for each episode.
All right. Let's dive into this bad boy. Johnny and Roland have staffed up.
Yeah.
I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, me too.
Because I don't know
Surprised. I thought that they were just going to start this off with just them.
Yeah, but also... Obviously not, right? Like, in hindsight, I'm like,
sure.
How can they man both, you know?
Sure, especially, yeah, having two, and then this one's a little larger than the other.
Yeah, you're going to need more of a staff here with, like, schedules and shifts and
also,
things.
Did you notice how none of them were enthusiastic about anything? They're just sitting there like freaking wet mops, like,
Wet mops is great. I thought the opposite. I was sort of like, these look like fresh-faced people that...
They looked young.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember when I had my first beer, like I just sat there was like, oh, I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? That's how they look. And they're receiving this book that Johnny's handing out to them. And like, I love that this book keeps popping up.
I know.
It is hilarious to me. And where he got all the copies of this book, like, he had to have, like, reached out to somebody or something.
Yeah, that's true, because he probably didn't take them with him.
Or ordered them on, like, Amazon or something. Oh, yeah, I have maybe. No idea.
That's a good point.
But whenever he's passing them out, and fucking Roland, dude, is just, like,
undermining him?
Yes!
At every turn? Yeah.
This is becoming a common thing again with mm-hmm. Roland.
I will say this, in this episode, Roland was starting to piss me off again, like the way he used to
yeah.
in the early days.
Yeah.
He's very annoying in this episode, and not in that way where he's taking the edge off of Johnny. He feels very much as though he's trying to piss him off and trying to yeah. undermine him once again, you know?
Like, all that talk at the beginning about how I'm the one you're going to come to, none of that needed to be said.
Yeah.
And really didn't. He got a real kick out of it as he was saying it, you know? And that was extremely annoying that he was going there. Even Johnny had to, like, turn his back to everybody else just to tell Roland, like, dude, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not an united front. What are we... It's not what we talked about.
Right.
But whatever. Roland is Roland. And it's always going to be Roland. And I think that's something that Johnny has just accepted at this point.
I think that's true. And then Stevie comes out with very bad news. Mm-hmm. That apparently there's termites and the foundation is on its last leg. Which, that's rough.
And this is Ronnie telling them this, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're supposed to understand that she came to do some sort of an inspection.
Sure.
In her capacity as a carpenter or
do we even know what exactly person. It is that she does?
Well, we know that she, you know, does construction things.
Okay.
She probably is a bit some sort of a contractor type of person.
Okay.
It worries me though that unfortunately it means that Roland bought this place without doing any sort of inspection. And without really knowing what he was getting into. Although I think we sort of already knew that from previous episodes. But it's concerning that
very
this property that they purchased with a second mortgage on their home and has put them in a considerable amount of debt and problems financially is now just a money pit that is going to fall apart on them any minute.
Yeah, and also the fact that Johnny takes it upon himself to be the concerned one in this whole situation. And Roland is just like, what? What's happening? You know? And it doesn't really have answers, but doesn't have questions either. He's just like, I don't know. I'm just going to sit here and like let it be dealt with by everybody else.
Yeah.
But he's the one who purchased this place.
But I would argue from his perspective that because he's the one that purchased this place and got the ball rolling on it,
yeah,
that now he feels as though he's done his part. You know what I mean?
Sure. But what I mean is, like, he's the one that's going to be left with this debt. Like, or if they can't figure out a solution to this problem, he's the one that took out the second mortgage. He's the one that he did all the things.
That's fair. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know? So that's a little strange to me that there's not more concern.
But insofar as he and Johnny are partners in this, whatever debt they end up being in,
yeah.
I believe that Roland believes, and I also believe that Johnny would take part in bearing
sure.
the burden of debt between the two of them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because they are partners, and Johnny is as much of an equal partner in this as Roland is in
yeah.
terms of the profit margins and all of that, and, you know, the stakes and all of that. So financially, I don't really think that Roland is thinking about it all that hard, you know?
True.
And, of course, let's face it, this is Johnny's baby.
It is. Know? This was what he has wanted for a long time. Roland is just kind of like along for the ride.
Yeah.
And wanted to make him happy and wanted to do something for him.
Yeah.
And also interested. It's fun. You know, it's an adventure. I think that's something that Jocelyn and Roland both wanted. You could see it in their excitement, like when they right. told them that they had done this.
This is a big deal for them.
Right.
To embark or to partake in something like this.
Yeah. The point of this is to make money.
Right.
The point of is to help them move up, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't sound like that's going to happen.
Well, not with this bullshit property.
Termites.
Goddamn. That and really, the foundation. Like, it scares and worries me, and it makes me very sad for them. Because you can tell this is shitty news.
Yeah, he immediately knew the severity of it.
Because foundation, I mean, you're talking about tearing it all down and rebuilding, man, right? Yeah. How do you fix foundation problems?
I don't know that you can. I mean, I'm not a contractor, but I don't know that you can.
It's bad. They are, you know, scratching their heads, trying to figure out what they're going to do about this. And to your point, Roland isn't really doing much to offer any solutions other than just whatever Johnny says, he just sort of goes, yeah, it sucks, you know?
Yeah.
But Stevie, who I'm actually very, like, pleased to see reading the book and
yes,
showing genuine investment and interest in this whole venture with these guys, she puts the tenets of business that she's learned from Johnny's book to use.
Right.
In offering this proposal to buy up all the damn roadside motels.
Yeah, 20 or 30.
Because bigger investment, bigger profit.
Which is absolutely correct. And like she said, it's exactly what Johnny has done before.
Yeah.
You don't make money off of owning one or two Rose videos. Mm-mm. You make money off of owning a whole franchise, a whole chain of them.
That's right.
You know, and if it wasn't for the fact that he had these issues with paying for David's, you know,
the catering,
whole menu for his wedding.
Yeah.
She would have never had continued reading the book or trying to figure out a way for him, because her heart is breaking for him.
I love how supportive of him she's being.
Absolutely.
At every step of the way, she's checking in with him. You know, how are you going to handle this financially? How are you doing? What are you thinking? How are you feeling? She's really there for him in a way that he's always been there for her.
Yeah.
And this is a great moment for her to pay it back and pay it forward, really.
And I'm glad you said that, because it's just like him, where it's she's being realistic, optimistic, but realistic about this. And that comes into play, the realism, when they walk into this tasting that they're doing with David. And the very first thing she says is, this place looks expensive. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you can do this?
Yep.
And he's the one that's kind of like, no, I got it. I could do it. But all of us are kind of like, if we know anything about David, we know this is going to be extravagant. We know this is going to be not cheap. Johnny has already offered to pay for this.
Let's talk about David.
Let's talk about it.
Where did he even find this fancy schmancy restaurant?
I don't know, but can I just say that for once, like, it's not often that I see Twyla get emotional about something, or she'll like say something and I'm like, you know, oh my God. I'm usually like, oh, Twyla, like that's just Twyla. But this time when she said, like, you're not going to have the cafe cater your wedding, I was kind of like, oh yeah. Oh, that's sad. I don't know. I just assumed, I guess.
I hadn't thought about it at all. Me, personally.
When I say I assumed, you're right. It wasn't a thought, because maybe it was just like, I didn't expect it to come up, and I expected it was going to like flow with it, that they were just going to
be
involved, maybe?
With the wedding planning stuff, I never thought that catering would be a topic of conversation or to build an episode around,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Which smart. I mean, it seems like a lot of things that are coming up as far as this wedding and the wedding planning are all contributing to these storylines.
Exactly. And it is smart, because it is a way to involve Twyla into the mix with the cafe of it all.
Yeah.
You're right. There was Sarah's line read of, oh, you're not going to have the cafe cater the wedding, did have a tinge of sadness.
Yes.
That we don't generally see from Twyla, because Twyla's, even when she's saying the most awful things about her life, it's always with a smile and a roll off your shoulders kind of attitude.
Yeah.
And this one had a sense of, oh man, really, you know, to it. And it did. It hit in that way. And David, well, Johnny's doing what Johnny always does, which is stick his foot in his mouth continually and not know how to get out of it without continuing to stick his foot in his mouth. David's face behind Twyla just contorting as domino after domino keeps falling.
Raising the eyebrows like, shut up.
It's,
yeah. Yeah. And Moira doesn't help when she's like, Johnny, what?
She is so just fucking with them so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
Oh, yeah.
I love Moira for that. Mm-hmm. She's such a needler. And so they go to this menu tasting that David has set up with Penelope. And, you know, it's just the height of class. They're doing beef tenderloin lobster rolls. And he's found a way to invite a few of his New York friends. And they're a real caviar crowd. Which, I'm sorry, point of contention, David gets to invite his New York friends and Patrick can't invite his family.
Are they not invited?
Well, we know at least most, or if not some of them, aren't coming. Because that was the whole point of the photos, right?
Yeah. Huh.
Not cool.
Interesting.
And your New York friends who have left you high and dry for the better part of four years and have nothing to do with you ever since you lost all your money.
Yeah.
What exactly is happening there?
Huh. Well, that just doesn't sit well with me now.
No, I know. That's bugged me.
Weird.
My ears perked up.
A caviar crowd.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
So, you know, Johnny, every step of the way, is trying to be cool about all of these fancy things that David wants on his menu, but can't help but get bogged down by things like, how much will this cost? Or, you know, can we double the garnish for the lobster roll as a side salad? And things like that. And David is mortified as all of this is going down.
The way he looks at his dad, like, poor thing. Again, a very Moira thing to do. Like, look at you.
Yeah.
Not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And I also love how when his dad makes a big deal about the lobster roll, like, oh, this is, you know, very pricey. He's like, it's a lobster roll. Like, it's not that crazy. Okay.
Yeah. I love a good meat you can eat with your hands. That tenderloin
beef
looked
tenderloin
amazing. Johnny is tripping about all these fancy things. David picks up on it, let's be honest. I will say I do appreciate this. I like that David isn't so far up his own ass
with
his sweating shit that he doesn't see what's affecting Johnny and the people around him in the midst of all of it. And so he comes to the office where Johnny is chowing down on leftover beef and looking for cheap repair options for the new motel, and tells him flat out, what the hell was that back there?
It was awkward.
It was awkward when she asked if he wanted to crack the top of the creme brulee. You asked, if I crack it, do I buy it?
Oh, my God.
It's one of the greatest lines.
I don't know that I would have been able to contain the laughter if I was there in that moment. That's pretty fucking brilliant. If I break it, do I buy it? Like, but I'm bumps. You know what I mean?
But the thing is it wouldn't have been funny. Mm-hmm. It would have been bury my head in the sand moment, I think.
If you were David?
Okay. Right? Because Johnny is asking it sincerely.
Right.
He's not saying that to make a joke. I mean, he's making light of a very serious question that he has about how much can I eat here at this tasting before it starts costing me.
Yeah. I mean, he's asking if the samples are free.
Right.
Yeah.
It's rough. And the thing is I can't blame either of them. Like, I understand from David's perspective. He wants, like, because Johnny says, too, right? He goes, you don't want people just to be talking about how great the food is. He goes, that's all I want people to talk about.
He's a foodie. David is a food person.
He's a foodie, but also, let's face it, he's having to compromise on a lot of things when it comes to this wedding, right? It was never going to be his dream journal wedding.
Right.
And the food is one thing that he can sort of control and can make the most out of here. And his dad is willing to pay for it and all these things.
Yeah.
So I understand from his point of view, he wants this food to sing. He wants the food to be the highlight and the focal point of his wedding. And then, of course, from Johnny's perspective, he is deep in a hole that he cannot find a way out of right now.
Yeah, that is major right now. It's sad. It's so sad. Because you also know that, like, Stevie is kind of behind the scenes watching this all go down. And she knows exactly what Johnny is thinking every time he has to bite into something or another plate is pushed in his direction. It's like, you know, that knife just goes deeper and deeper and deeper.
And to go back to what we were saying earlier, she genuinely cares.
Yeah, she does.
And not only because this is also her livelihood, but I think because she loves Johnny and she doesn't want to see him overextend himself, stretch himself too thin financially, or feel bad about what he can and can't do.
Yeah.
This scene between the two of them.
Mr. Rose, it's not always going to be like this.
You know, we had a sizable nest egg set aside for David's wedding. He was talking about Bali for a while. We were going to charter some jets and fly everybody. I'm going to get some air, Stevie.
He's genuinely sad.
Yes. I mean,
it's killing him.
He is reminiscing on a life he once had and plans that he had for his son's wedding. They, you know, David had all these dreams as well at one point. I think they've changed a little bit.
Sure.
And, you know, given where they're at now in life. But Johnny has always wanted to provide for him. And give him that dream wedding. That has not changed, you know, that want or that need to do that for his son. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. It's genuinely heartbreaking seeing how rough this is for him to, like, accept.
Yeah.
He's his dad. And as a parent, yes, I want to give you everything you want because I promised you that one day I would, you know, and he did.
Yeah.
In their former life, you know?
Yeah, I think, and I mean, it's especially hard because that moment comes on the heels of David telling him that the Brewers have this nest egg that they've set aside and they can, you know, they've given them a bunch of money and all this stuff. And Johnny, I think, has a bit of pride, to borrow one of our listeners' words. Like, you know, he has pride about money, let's face it, you know, and money's a tough subject in the best of times.
Yes.
Let alone when you're struggling with it. And he feels, I don't want to put words in his mouth, I guess, but I do feel that he feels he's a bit of a failure here.
Yeah.
You know?
I 100% agree with that. I think that if he didn't, he wouldn't have spoken about the past and what he could have done for his son.
And you know what? I will say this too about Johnny. It's a rare Johnny moment that he gets bogged in his past. He usually doesn't dwell too much on their former life. Mm-hmm. He's touched on it here and there.
But he's also very quick to remind people, or remind his family, I should say, how far they've come.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, he's kind of stuck. In that moment of like, we're here. Like, this is what's happening right now. And it's sad.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking. But again, it prompts Stevie and gives Stevie the platform to sort of come riding in on this shining stallion. Yeah.
Because Johnny's first thought, or no, that's not fair. I do believe that he wanted to try out everything he could. I mean, he was on the computer looking, you know, for repairs, what they could do. And I think at some point he just was defeated. He felt defeated and this isn't going to happen. And then, you know, he told them that their best bet is to sell.
And just try to get back some of their investment.
Yeah. And that's not enough for Stevie.
No.
It's so funny to see her like this now, because for so long we've seen her like, ugh. Very like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. You remember that, how we were getting really annoyed by that situation? But then also like, I don't know what I'm doing here at the motel. She just very much didn't want to be a part of the motel when we first met her. And now all she wants to do is make sure that this works for them. In this moment, it's more for Johnny, but bigger picture, it's for all of them. I mean, they've all invested a lot in this, so
I think my big aha moment with this episode was as far as Stevie's concerned, I think that all of the cabaret business that led into the first few episodes of this season was all a bit of a red herring for us, the audience, because we were set up to think and believe that Stevie's future was this bright, get out of this town thing of like empowerment and self-growth and all of that. And a big part of that was to leave.
Yeah, that's all we could talk about.
Right. And I think what the show has done here is they've set it up so that she's still growing, she's still evolving, she still has dreams and aspirations, but they are with this business.
Yeah.
And she is putting all of her like self-investment and her energies, rather than into getting out of this town, into building this business with her partners.
Yeah.
And making something of herself in that way. And I think that that's really cool, and I'm excited about it. One of our listeners either wrote us an email or, you know, sent us a message, something about, or something to the effect of, what the hell's going on with Stevie? She had all this potential and amazingness, and now she's just second fiddle to David's wedding planning. But I don't actually think that's true. I do think that there is a story here for her. And the story is that this business is now becoming her baby the way it's Johnny's baby.
The way she didn't appreciate it at first. Mm-hmm. Didn't care for it at first. And now, yeah, that's happening. Now this is slowly becoming something that she's taking a lot of pride in, that she's helping build.
Yeah.
With her friends.
Right. And she's kind of become a bit of a disciple of Johnny's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, going back, it's a simple thing, but she's reading that book.
Yeah.
And it's not nothing. She's taking the time and the care and the effort to think about this business and to invest in it.
I'm glad that they're giving this relationship between Johnny and Alexis its moments, because it's very important. Stevie. Johnny and Stevie. Because as much as like Patrick and David are important, as much as Moira and Johnny are important, you know, as much as Ted and Alexis were important, this friendship between Johnny and Stevie is very important too. I think more so for Stevie, but a lot for Johnny too, because when he forgets who he is, there she is, you know, to pick him back up. And Roland's just there for the comedic relief, and obviously he bought the motel, but it's a very, very important relationship.
Agreed.
And they're giving it more and more, which I'm very appreciative of.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yes. So they're going to buy motels.
They're going to do it.
20 or 30.
Johnny says, too, that, you know, this is a real idea that he can call in some favors on. And people from his past may or may not be willing to take his calls. But this is a solid idea that they can definitely pitch and sell and has legs. You know, this can actually go somewhere for them. I'm actually really excited to see what's going to happen with this Rosebud franchise.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wonder if they're going to let us know if he does reach out to anybody, if we're going to find out who that is, or if we're going to see any part of that.
I feel like we might.
Yeah?
Yeah. The way this season is going, they're spending a lot of time on things I didn't think they'd spend a lot of time on.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like we're going to get some of that. I mean, we'll see.
Interesting.
Why don't we take a break?
Let's.
And then when we get back,
we'll unpack Moira Rose.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
And we're back.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening.
Oh my gosh.
Alexis is a hot, hot mess.
She is. I love that that's how you started that. Yeah, she's...
Man.
She's not her usual self.
Is that supposed to be an extension in her hair that David picks out?
Yeah. What do you mean?
So she wears extensions?
I'm assuming so, yeah. Yeah, I haven't noticed that her hair's been longer, but she could certainly be using it for volume, I guess, to make her hair, like, just, you know, thicker.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's a hair extension.
But I know, but it bugs me.
Really?
No, yeah, because I feel like that means that this whole time she's been wearing extensions.
Yeah.
No.
It's not surprising.
I don't like it.
Why?
I don't like it. I like to think that that's her natural, beautiful hair.
Ah, nowadays?
Whatever.
I wear extensions. I have extensions.
Yeah, but I know that. Do you get what I'm saying? Like
yeah, but...
I feel like we've been led to believe that Alexis is Alexis. There's no, like... fakeness to her, you know?
Like, no, that's no. I 100% believe, like, buy that she would wear extensions
this whole time.
I don't think whole time. I think that I don't think she wears them all the time. I just think that she, when she wants a little bit of oomph in her hair, she like clips them in there.
All right, I'll allow it.
That's so funny.
Anyway, so she's a hot mess. She's got, like, her hair's in a messy top knot, and she's wearing sweats, which she's never worn.
Yep.
And no makeup, nothing, and she comes schlepping into the cafe, and I love how the family just all, like, stops talking, and they're like, okay, smiles on, everybody. Just
they're really
natural.
Trying to get behind her in this moment, like, oh, look at you.
You look good.
Wow. Whoa.
But it's in this moment that we learn that Moira's old producer, or not her producer, but the producer of Sunrise Bay, has reached out to her for a meeting.
Yes.
Here in town. And she's just, you know, everyone, Johnny especially, is like, oh, I wonder what this is about. And she's sort of very nonchalant about the whole thing. Oh, probably just a new project. You know, he's always had his hands in a few fires.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Do you think that's her trying to be casual about it? Like,
yes.
So that she doesn't psych herself out?
I think so. I had to think a lot about, like, this particular storyline, because the fact that they're bringing back this show and, like, the people that were in her lives during the making of this show, it was a big deal for me.
Okay.
Because, hi, this is the Moira that we knew, like, that everybody knew and that we've been told so much about. And we hoped that maybe at some point we'd get a little bit of that, you know, a little
glimpse.
We'd see some of it. And now that it's being brought up and these people in our lives are being brought here to this town to meet with her. I think that this was her way of, like, not making it a big deal. Because she didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to get her hopes up. But she's also optimistic about it. I mean,
she's taking the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, so that's
yeah.
a good thing.
She thinks it's some sort of, like, a reunion or something that's going to happen.
Well, I don't think she thinks that. I don't think she thinks it has anything to do with Sunrise Bay. Initially, I legitimately think that Tippy Bernstein is back in, is here in town, and she thinks that he's gonna
another project
for her, something, you know, or let's talk about something that, you know, he's got in the works over in Hollywood town.
Yeah.
I also love the little touch of she's always coming to Alexis's room to find shoes.
Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Yeah.
She's, like, fully dressed, but then she gets her shoes out of her closet, which that room is also a hot mess. Oh, my God.
Yes. Alexis is not taking care of herself at this moment.
It's, yeah.
She has David's pillow on her bed. Did you see that? She was hugging David's pillow.
I did see that.
Yikes. I don't know if David's going to be too happy about that, but.
Well, I don't think David is spending that much time at the motel these days. So he probably can't care too much. But the room is a mess. Moira comes in there and Alexis is watching Sunrise Bay.
Yes.
Which this was a treat. Getting to see a little bit of this soap opera play out between her and Victor Garber was just such a treat. She looks so good.
Yes, she does. Flawless.
I mean, they did a really good job of like younging her up a bit, you know,
with the makeup,
sure, like, the makeup and the lighting and all of that.
Yes.
You know? But she looks really good. And he looks ridiculous with his hilarious wig. Like, what the hell is wrong with his hair? But something about take these pills because your father is like your split personality and these pills are going to get them out of your head or something.
I don't know what's happening, but Alexis does because she's binge watching this show, this soap opera.
Yeah.
And Moira's very excited at this.
Well, yeah. I mean, she seems to be... You know what it is with Moira? I think that she... is a person who completely understands Alexis's need to go through this right now.
Yeah.
To have this moment of, I'm not going to think about anything. I'm not going to take care of myself. I'm just going to, like, dive deep into something that I can't, that, like, I can't control anything else, so I can control this kind of a mode.
Yeah.
And I think Moira understands that all too well and supports it and would be the last person to tell Alexis to snap out of it, you know, and get a grip. And I also think that, I think that that's why she says to her, don't you dare get out of bed, you know, not only because, I mean, look at Alexis right now, she's not exactly representing well. But Alexis could clean herself up if she wanted to.
Sure.
That's not really what's happening here. I think Moira is genuinely like, no, just stay in this mode until you're ready to snap out of it.
Yeah. Moira's like 100% confident that she can handle these two. Or she can handle Tippy.
Exactly.
She doesn't know Cliff's there yet.
She doesn't know Cliff's there.
But she knows, come on, this isn't like the meeting of all meetings. Like, I know this guy. We have a relationship with one another. Yeah. He's cool. I'm cool. This will be fine.
Right.
Stay here.
Right. And also, too, if there was going to be an offer on the table or anything like that, she doesn't have to agree to anything right then and there.
Right.
She knows she can come home, talk about it, figure it out kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
This power lunch between her and Tippy isn't going to, you know, make or break any deals.
Yeah.
So to your point, she's like, I'm fine. We also learn that Alexis was told to call Clifton Sparks Uncle Sparky.
Wow.
That's got some major connotations written all over it that I don't feel comfortable with.
It does. It's strange. Awkward.
It definitely speaks to a time and a place.
Yeah. Don't know how to take that.
Yeah. Rough.
Yes.
I do love that Alexis calls him Tickle Bernstein. That makes me very happy. And so Moira goes to the cafe where Tippy is waiting for her. He's also a hot mess. The man can barely get out of this booth.
He's doing his vertigo is doing better, right?
Yeah, he hired a hypnotherapist to be married.
And then divorced.
Yeah.
And took all his money.
Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh. Oh, Tippy.
I will say, I have a major problem because Saul Rubinek is like one of the best actors. I love him.
Yeah.
I've loved him in everything he's done. Most recently, I've been watching Hunters on Amazon.
Is he in that?
He's in that.
Wow.
Yeah. He and Carol Kane play husband and wife.
Wow.
And they play off of each other really well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's very good in it, and he's very funny, and he's always played characters that I've liked.
Yeah.
And I cannot stand him in this. And it's a major, like, brain fart for me to, like, have that disconnect, because when I saw him on the screen, I was like, oh, this guy, I like this guy.
I was very excited when I saw them post the picture
and then immediately
to tease the episode. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, so not only is Garber gonna be in this, but Rubinek too, like, what?
And weird. Then immediately I was just like, this guy, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah, you know? Yeah,
but whatever. And so we learn that not only is he there,
yeah,
but so is Clifton himself.
Oh dear.
Moira fucking Rose.
Wow!
I mean, I figure time sits still in this town, but look at you. You are just as gorgeous as the day I discovered you.
Oh, Tippy. You're as alive as ever.
It's been far too long, but I come bearing gifts, and the first one is standing right over there.
Clifton.
Muffy. Looking luscious as always.
Oh, dear.
Ew.
Yes.
I need very to ill. Bathe in hand sanitizer after two words from this fucker.
Yeah.
Muffy.
I love how he also goes on to say that he quit drinking.
Right. Just wine and scotch.
Yes. These days. Yep. That'll do it. That's going to save his life now. This guy.
Talk about a has-been.
Yeah, really.
You know, you could accuse Moira of a lot. You know, about being stuck in her past and sort of maybe resting on her laurels of her heyday in Sunrise Bay. But this motherfucker.
Anybody that wears a turtleneck under a blazer is a has-been. Dude, listen.
That's a hot take I can get behind.
Okay. If we're going to go off about Artie in the last episode, we're going to have some words about Clifton's freaking turtleneck and blazer.
And he's fully wearing a piece, right? Like, that is a toupee.
Not in...
Here in the cafe?
Yeah, no.
That's his real hair?
That's his real hair.
Okay.
I mean, we all know, obviously, in, like, the soap opera flashbacks. Well, yeah. But no, I think that's his real hair.
Okay.
God, I hope so. If you're going to buy a toupee, get a better one.
I mean, right?
You're going to spend the money.
That's kind of where I was going.
Come on.
So they sit down. Moira is very quick to... Moira, the minute she sees him, did you notice... Complete mode shift.
Yes.
Her.
Yes.
With Tippy, she's like, oh, Tippy, nice to see you. Yeah. You know, she's doing what Moira does with everybody, right?
Two old friends shooting the shit.
And she kind of has like a bit of an upper hand on him because he's such a like hot mess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so she says things like vaudevillian charm, you know, in her Moira way. But the minute she sees that Cliff's there, it's Cliffy this, Cliffy that. She becomes a little bit, for lack of a better word, like demurred. You know, like she kind of takes like a junior stance with him.
Yeah. I feel like we automatically can sense that she has, there's something there. There's a tension.
Yeah, there's a power dynamic shift.
And she has to, you can see the wheels spinning in her head. She is not only, you know, later on trying to convince Alexis that this could work or that he's a good person, but she's also trying to convince herself because she's not even buying it. And she really wants to, I think, to be that bigger person, to be better, to have grown from, you know, this relationship because she doesn't know the extent of which, you know, the role that he played, really, in her demise, like on this soap opera.
Yeah.
And she does know, however, though, that he lasted and she didn't. And there's a lot of tension there and it's so obvious.
Yeah.
And you can see it. She's uncomfortable.
Long story short, Tippy has an offer.
Mm-hmm.
They are rebooting Sunrise Bay. Hot new young cast with a couple of the old guys peppered in to ground it, you know, to really give it some gravitas.
Which is not uncommon. This happens.
They did it recently with Dallas.
Yeah.
They rebooted Dallas and then they threw Patrick Ewing in there like, here you go. That was his name, right?
I don't. I didn't see the second one, so I don't.
Neither. But
the reboot,
the
I didn't
name,
know who
right?
they threw in there. Yes.
Or is it the guy that. Well,
no, it was
whatever.
Ewing.
Patrick Ewing was a Dallas person, right?
Yes.
Who cares?
Whatever.
The listeners know.
Let
what
us
we're
know. Fact
at.
Check us. But yeah, I mean, this is a thing that happens.
This is a thing that happens.
And it's becoming a lot more popular nowadays because when they try to reboot, you know, it's happening all the time. Are they always successful? No.
More times than not, they are not.
Right. But and they're doing it. And it is popular to get a new young cast who is, you know, the younger generation is going to be interested in that.
Right.
But also they're trying to kind of reach out to the older ones to get them to watch too. So this happens. But then they start talking about like Nicole Kidman and she, I don't know what's going on with her in this moment.
No, she immediately gets turned off. Like, I think I think she was already a little bit, remember, like we talked about, right? When she just thought this was going to be a power lunch between her and Tippy, she was already like, what is this? We don't, I don't know what I'm here for, but let's go see what he has to say.
Yeah.
And then he puts this amazing offer in front of her. Here's a contract, sign it. We've got, you know, it's going to be a reboot. You're going to be on it as a full-time cast member, prime time, amazing slot, all this money, whatever. And then he starts talking about Nicole Kidman and she's just like, hold on, for real now? Like, for real, Nicole Kidman? Really? On this? Like, she knows better than to blindly sign contracts these days.
She's smarter.
Yeah.
You know, she cares a lot about her career. And she also is very aware, as is everybody, that she's a big deal right now.
I don't think she's aware of it here. I'll put it this way. She's as aware of it as she's always been about herself. I don't think it's until after she talks to Alexis that she realizes how big of a deal that she is, really, and how much leverage she actually has here.
Interesting. Okay.
That's my take on it.
No, yeah, I'll allow it. I just, there was a difference for me in seeing her tell her family in the beginning about Tippy being there and about how he, you know, he's called for a meeting with her. She was just very chill about it. Like, oh, yeah, he wants to meet with me. And I think that that's her being aware of, like, I'm moving up.
Mm.
And I don't know where this is going to go, but I know right now I'm going to ride this and I'm good. But yeah, I completely agree with you where she doesn't understand the full extent of it until Alexis has to, like, tell her, like, listen, you are the only person right now in that cast that is being talked about.
What I'm picking up on when I say that she doesn't quite know about her star rising in this world just yet, until she talks to Alexis, is something very small. But it hits my ear every time I see that scene. They say, Tippy says, that crow picture, who knew? Now, what is a Moira response to that? What does your gut say Moira would respond to that?
Maybe something to the effect of, like, that everybody knew or that...
Right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't Moira be the first person to say, well, I mean...
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Those of us in the know did.
Right.
What does she say here? Oh... thanks. It's a very un-Moira response. She takes the compliment as the compliment. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she takes it like, oh, gee, me, you know? And again, whether or not that's her feeling in that moment, it's what she's saying.
Yeah.
Which means that that's the stance she has in this interaction with these two men.
Yeah.
She's definitely taking a lower stance here with these guys.
That makes me sad.
And then that's why the Alexis moment really hits her, because Alexis, and you hit on it earlier too, she goes in with all this excitement and good news to share, right? And Alexis is just like, this guy fucked you over. And she's all like, no, it was me. I screwed myself out of it via contract negotiations. This is like the story that she's told herself this whole time. And it's what I think has helped her, like, make peace with why she was no longer on that show, right? Because the narrative was like, well, they didn't deserve me anyway, or, you know, that kind of a thing. Like, it allowed her to, like, have this upper hand in her mind about this show. And she doesn't want to hear it. She doesn't want to hear that Clifton's a piece of shit. She knows that he was a drunk, and that was, like, he had his demons. But, like, she's not ready to, like, face it. And even when Alexis shows her that clip, even then she's like, no, he was drunk there. You know, it was all me and my contract and everything.
Yeah.
Then when Alexis tells her, no, your star is rising. You're the only person anybody is talking about now from those days. You are the star of this thing, and you need to ask for what you deserve.
I don't know. I do know that scene is hard to watch when she's, you know, trying to make excuses for Clifton and their past and his past and everything that he's done and said and blah, blah, blah. It's so crazy that Alexis has her head on so straight in this. And she's really trying to, like, school Moira in this moment. And it's...
It's amazing, too, because we see her in the beginning of this episode, just a hot mess mm-hmm. shell of herself. Mm-hmm. And she is still a bit of a shell of herself. She's still in her sweats. She hasn't left the bed. She's gone down a rabbit hole of Sunrise Bay, you know.
Well, she's now the head of their, like, fan club.
Yeah, she's, you know, like, she's kind of spiraling a little bit. But even in that mode, she is still wearing her publicist hat.
Absolutely.
She tells Moira, as your publicist and your daughter,
yeah,
like, I, you know, you need to know these things.
As silly as it seems to have her be, you know, doing all this research and going down this hole, and now she's the head of this fan club, it's also perfect.
Yeah.
Because it's the very thing that, you know, the reason that she ended things with Ted and couldn't go was also the very thing that is now pulling her out of this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of perfect how that's working.
It's amazing. And I love too that she sort of empowers Moira.
Yeah.
And then Moira gets to go off and do it. Alexis doesn't need to be her mouthpiece. Alexis doesn't need to speak for her. Moira knows her worth and she knows how to hold her own.
Yeah. For sure.
And I literally like fist pumped and said, fuck yeah, Moira, during that entire scene at the end. Because it was just like really cool to see her stand up
yeah.
for herself and for what she deserves.
It's a good scene, that final one.
This was such a like feminist episode. It was like a real like, you know, women empowering women thing.
Yeah, thus the word one of our listeners gave us, the fierce.
Fierce
word.
Yeah. So she does. So she goes to the drinks meeting with Tippi and Clifton, where yeah. they're basically going to, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's and make this thing happen. And she comes in wearing her Vivian wig.
Yes, I loved that she did that.
Fire move. God, I love her so much. And they sit down, and she even says, she's like, I want to keep a clear head for this meeting. She's not going to get drunk like Clifton over there, who's like probably six scotches deep at this point.
Yuck.
Ugh, and that gross joke he makes about the waitress and the sex.
Yes. And I'll have another drink, so too.
Gross. So gross.
Get out of here.
Cringe. He starts making comments about contract negotiations, and she's like, excuse me, what would you know about my contract negotiations? And then that's when you realize that fucking Tippi was in on it too. Like, as the executive producer of Sunrise Bay,
yeah,
he sided with Cliff over yeah. her,
and he says, allow this
to be my
way of making amends. What?
So gross.
It is gross.
Fucking gross men, you know? And then so she gets to slap him around a few more times, which was like an amazing payoff. And then tells Tippi, like, all right, so now about this contract, mm-hmm. I have some demands.
So how was the meeting?
You, Alexis, are one shrewd little Reynard. You were right about Clifton.
He sucks in this, by the way.
So he had you written off the show?
Yes. But I used that little nugget to negotiate a superior deal. I am, after all, the one cast member still making headlines.
Oh, so you still said yes?
I did. But on the condition that Clifton be written off the show, death of my choosing. And I asked for more money.
Okay, yes, Mom.
And a diamond tennis bracelet.
Okay, well, that seems like a bit much, but it still sounds like you got what you're worth.
Oh, God, no. I made them an offer they had to refuse.
So you're not doing it then?
No, thank you, Alexis. Thank you for removing my rosy lunette so that I might see Clifton for who he really is. And if you did all that without getting out of bed, imagine what you're capable of doing.
She calls her a, what does she say? A shrewd little Reynard. I had to look up that reference, but there's medieval French literature about Reynard the Fox.
Oh,
so she's calling her a shrewd little fox, but
okay.
in her Moira way. That scene is so amazing.
It is.
Because not only does she show how empowered she is, she also shows how proud she is of Alexis. She yeah. empowers Alexis all in like one fell swoop.
Yeah.
And ultimately, she basically negotiated herself out of the show.
Yeah.
Which is what...
Amazing.
I think she always wanted to do, I think, you know?
It was brilliant.
It's
everything
amazing.
Was on her terms.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing. What more could you ask for?
Yeah.
Everything being on your terms? Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
She didn't want to do it. At the end of the day, she's like, you know what?
She doesn't.
What is this
it.
Worth to me?
Exactly.
No.
She knows now that she does have the world. Like, the world is her oyster.
Yeah.
And offers like this, they're not going to be few and far between. This is just the tip of the iceberg for her. She doesn't need to jump on it just because it came to
her.
Yeah,
right.
Know?
Right.
She's worth more than that. She deserves more than that.
Yep. And Alexis knows that when your own daughter is telling you that, and then you're able to turn it around and tell your own daughter how amazing she is too.
Yeah. It was really powerful.
Yeah, it was.
That whole thing was really cool.
It was.
I do need to also have another Moira say what.
Okay.
When she first comes into the room and Alexis is like on the computer in her deep dive of all the Sunrise Bay fan theories and things. And she starts telling Moira about how Clifton was responsible for getting her off the show. And she says, don't be a dotty pull.
What the heck is that? Please.
It basically just means, like, don't be foolish. Like, not like being a dotty pull is like being a fool. But here's the kicker. So I, for whatever reason, I was watching this on Hulu and the subtitle function doesn't want to work for this episode. And, like, it works for anything else I watch, but it doesn't want to work for this episode, which made things like Moira Say What's very difficult.
Oh.
Because she also just sort of throws it away. She says dotty pole like anybody says that all the time, you know? And I couldn't quite put my finger on what she was saying to then look it up. So I literally just Googled what I thought I heard, which was dotty. Like, I typed D-O-D-D-Y-P-O-L-E. It was like, is this a word? Let's see. And it's a fucking word. And that's what it means. And I was like, that's what she's saying. It's amazing. So don't be a dotty pole. It will never get old. I think that just about does it.
I think so.
Any other stray observations?
No, I think we're good.
Oh, I do have one other stray observation. When Roland and Johnny are in the diner talking about what their options are, before Stevie comes in, Roland mentions that, you know, he's gotten so desperate he might just sell his baseball signed by Gina Davis.
Yes. Oh, my God. When I heard that, I was cracking up.
Hilarious.
It is. It really is.
That is very funny.
Something very Roland to say.
Absolutely. Also that you miss 100% of the tapes you don't play.
This book, man.
I really need it to exist.
I know. Me too. Man. I would read it.
I would too.
Absolutely. I would read it.
Absolutely read it.
Advice is a little outdated, but you know, whatever.
It, it's working for them now once
I
again
guess
here.
So.
I feel like the tenets of business stand.
Yeah.
Even if they're particular to running a video business, you know.
That is so good. Oh my gosh.
Yep. All right. Let's get into our next segment.
Who wore what best?
Whoop, whoop.
Mine's very straightforward and doesn't need any explanation, but I'll give you one anyways. I'm going to go for Alexis being down and out because it is very rare, if ever, that we've seen Alexis this way. But also, like, yes, I feel it. I feel this. I feel her in this moment. We've all been here. But also, she still doesn't look bad.
I know.
She can't do any wrong.
So true.
She really can't. And this is proof of that. So I have to give it to her in her sweats and, you know, her down and out look. So,
well, you've inspired me because I felt like I couldn't give it to that for some reason. Because the segment is who wore what best. And I was like,
oh, she wore the down and out look best.
That's the thing is like, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I went like in my moment of weakness, I had to give it to Moira. In her meeting at the Wobbly Elm, Vivian wig and that furry coat and cinched at the waist, and she just looks so good and so
she
phenomenal.
Does.
But in my heart of hearts, it was Alexis. I'll be honest. I say it as if like it's written in stone, like I can't change my mind. But you know what I mean.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'll stick to my Moira guns there. So let's get into ratings. Ratings. I'm giving this episode 4.5 out of 5 Rosie Lunettes.
Ah.
I thought that it was a straight down the middle, perfectly good episode. Nothing that I didn't like. nothing that left me like I wanted more. I just thought it was a great episode.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in the pantheon of the most amazing episodes ever.
Sure.
Hence, it's not a five. But but I really couldn't find any other points of contention with it.
Yeah.
You know, as far as an episode is concerned. So 4.5 out of 5.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I am going to be less generous than you for once.
Wow.
And I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5 nest eggs. You know how in the past, when I've ever given like a 4.5 out of 5, and I'm like, you know what? It's because of this, whatever. I give the reason. And I'm like, and I'm not willing to let that thing be a full point.
Right.
I'm not going to give it that much, you right. know?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I couldn't give it a full 5 was because of Clifton. He is a 1 point for me. He is a negative 1 point for me because he's an asshole.
Sure.
And I don't want to give any man who's like that, that, you know what I mean? I don't want to give him any less, any more. He is negative 1 point. So this is a 4 out of 5 nest eggs.
I yeah. respect that. So before we wrap this up, we do have a new patron.
Oh, we do.
Yes. Daphne.
Oh.
Daphne, thank you so much for subscribing at the podcast producer level. You
she sent us a lovely email.
Beautiful.
Yes.
So, Daphne, thank you so much for becoming a new patron. And for her shout out, Daphne wanted us to simply say, thanks, Schitt's Creek, for being more than just an amazing show, but a show that has touched people's lives for the better.
Oh.
Which is very sweet and such a selfless shout out.
Daphne, why are you so amazing?
Oh, Daphne.
We're so lucky to have listeners, you know?
We really are.
Period.
Yeah, so true.
But listeners like that.
Absolutely.
You guys are all just amazing. I love when they send us these emails. I love diving into them. It's why we do this.
We probably owe our listeners another mailbag episode.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Don't you think?
For sure.
Maybe afterwards. Maybe after all the season stuff is done.
That's fun.
We can do like
we can do that.
A mailbag for some of the emails that we've gotten that we haven't really been able to address.
Sure. I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so look forward to that. And as always, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Upschitt's Creek Pod on Instagram and Facebook or at Upschitt's Creek on Twitter. You can also send us an email at upschittscreekpod@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/upschittscreek. And until next time.
We love you, shitheads. Kielvage.
Blessings.
This episode is brought to you by the generous donations of Emily, Lucina, and Daphne.
You're simply the best.